In today's episode, we'll have an NFL Week 4 pick'em. Will Lou go against his beloved Eagles, and will Doug go against his beloved New York Giants? If you're listening to this on iTunes, remember to subscribe, rate, and review us. Give us a review. Make sure you subscribe. It downloads automatically on your phone. And let's do it.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to this edition of The Yes Men. I am Lou DiPietro. To my left is our announcer extraordinaire and my co-host, Doug Williams.
Yeah, just, you know, that information is pretty vital.
A little bit of a new format there for the intro. We'll take it.
Yeah, why not?
Well, we're going to do NFL for week four pick'em, but we have to start because of who signs our paychecks. Rest in peace, the 2014 New York Yankees.
I love how you say that we have to start with the Yankees because they pay our paychecks, and then your first thing is to say rest in peace. I don't think we have to start with them necessarily, and if you'd like to, that's your choice.
No, I think we should. I think, you know, as we tape this, the game has just ended. The Yankees have lost to Baltimore. The postseason hopes are gone, and now Thursday's game can be all about saying goodbye to Derek Jeter, assuming Mother Nature allows that to happen in the plans. And I was talking about this earlier, as a matter of fact, with Jack Curry, of all people. And I asked him, I was like, is it wrong that I'm kind of happy that the Yankees officially were eliminated today? And he looked at me and he goes, no, I don't think you're wrong. And I think it's only because now, you know, the Yankees have known for a long time that their playoff possibilities was a severe long shot. And the fans have made it an even longer shot. People are, you know, like to be negative. They didn't think the Yankees were going to make it. And now that it's happened, it's almost like, okay, good. Now we can finally focus on this is it for Jeter. Because with him playing his last home game tomorrow and his last three games, hopefully, in Boston this weekend, there's no pressure. It's really just, it's the end of the era, and it makes four games that would be otherwise meaningless, three really, because Baltimore's still playing for home field advantage throughout the American League. It makes a handful of games that would be ultimately meaningless now something. The playoff push would have done it that way too, but, you know, if the Yankees had been eliminated Saturday,
I know what you mean. I mean, I know what you mean. I would have liked to see them, you know, compete and push for a title just because I know that Derek Jeter is just full of magic. It's the way he is. And I think everyone kind of thought maybe there's a chance that they'd be, you know, two out with two games to go somehow.
And we're fans. I mean, that right there says we want them to win.
But I do understand what you mean. And, you know, we talked about this earlier today. A lot of things are still up in the air. And by the time we finish recording this, maybe we'll know the answers, but maybe we won't. You know, will this game on Thursday get rained out? We know the weather's supposed to be really bad, and will it get rained out, or will they play it later, or what's going to happen there, and will he play in Boston, et cetera? But, yeah, I agree with you. I think it's important that everyone can now focus on Jeter. You know, it's also important for Joe Girardi. He can't – I think he's probably a little bit relieved, although he's generally very angry that his team's not going to the postseason. But I think his job gets a little bit easier now because he can handle this. Mm-hmm. He can't go back to the, well, we're still competing for a playoff spot thing because that was kind of his job. Now he can just answer all the Jeter questions, you know?
And that should pretty much end the season for Jacoby Ellsbury and Carlos Beltran for good.
Yeah, no reason to push it.
Mark Teixeira – I mean, depending on how his wrist feels, he went deep in the eighth inning today, so obviously he's okay, but if that wrist flares up again, there's no point in pushing him. You know, are we going to see John Ryan Murphy now behind the plate for a second straight year in the middle of the biggest moment of the season for the team when Derek Jeter gets his exit on Thursday night? You know, are we going to see a lot more of Yuri Perez and Antoine Richardson and Stephen Drew and Brendan Ryan? That's the most interesting thing, I think, to me, is will Jeter play shortstop the next four nights? You know he's going to play shortstop tomorrow. That's not a doubt. You knew he was going to be the DH today, day game after night game. When it comes to Boston, do they take a look at Stephen? Do you know enough of Stephen Drew, Brendan Ryan? Do you take a look at him? I mean, is do you really have to plan for the future, or you just trot Jeter out there and say, this is it, bud, go for it?
I think if Jeter says he wants to play in Boston, he will be saying, I want to play shortstop. Like, Jeter doesn't want a DH. So I don't see him DHing, because that almost seems like, what are you saving him for? What are you doing? I understand you want to get a look at Steven Drew, but the Yankees have enough tape on Steven Drew playing shortstop. So I think he'll play shortstop all the last four games, assuming they play all of them, assuming he participates in all of them. And I think it's, you know, the irony of him ending his career in Boston is it's there. It's actually one of the ballparks that he's performed most poorly at over his career. He has a few, you know, great games. Obviously, he's been playing for 20 years, but, you know, he's a 265 career hitter in that ballpark. And at the same time, it's been so many big victories there, so many years getting, you know, booed by the fans. And now you're going to see the ultimate, I think, respect by the Boston fans. And I think he'll want to play. We talked about this early in the year, but he's such a competitor. I don't see him just being like, oh, we're out of the playoffs. Yeah, I don't want to. So I'll sit this one out.
And win, lose, or draw, we will be there this weekend, hopefully with a Yes Men video podcast of some sort this weekend.
So look for us on YesNetwork.com.
I agree with that. It's odd to me that Boston is one of the worst ballparks for Jeter. I know he would naturally, just by scheduling, have played the most games either there or Camden Yards or at Skydome, Rogers Center, whatever it's been called.
Or the Trop.
The Trop to a lesser extent, because the Rays came in 3 years after he started his career, so that's 10, 15, 20 less games there. I mean, Jeter's had a tailor-made right field swing his entire career, and if there's any right field where it's easier to get a hit than Yankee Stadium, it's Fenway Park. And then if he straight up pulls the ball, there's the monster. So it's kind of weird to me, given the dimensions of that ballpark, that it's one of his worst. But, you know, Enrique Wilson used to own Pedro Martinez, so things happen in baseball.
Yeah, you never know if hitters don't pick up the ball. At some places, it does seem like sometimes the mound is right on you at Fenway Park. And let's not forget, a lot of Derek's at-bats against the Boston Red Sox were against Pedro Martinez and Josh Beckett in his prime.
High-leverage situations,
And Curt Schilling as well. They've had some good starting pitchers. So
he's got a few off Tim Wakefield, too.
He hated hitting against Mike Timlin, which is actually a fun fact. He brought that up in our Yes interview with him to Meredith Marakovitz. He said, you know, it's weird. You obviously hate facing guys like Pedro and Randy Johnson, but he was like, I couldn't hit Mike Timlin, longtime reliever for the Boston Red Sox.
And yet Tim Wakefield is the one who surrendered more hits to Jeter than anyone else.
That's right.
He loved the knuckleball, apparently. And next week, you know.
Yeah, I was about to say.
The season is officially over for Yankees fans and the team. Next week, we will wait out the last four games for a postmortem on the season. Doug and I will talk about things as we see them heading into next year. I will give you my theory on why I think the Yankees 2015 shortstop is already on the roster. Doug will give you his thoughts on those topics surrounding the team and free agency, and we'll talk a little bit about Alex Rodriguez's return. And we'll also go over, we found our predictions from earlier this year, some of which look very salient, some of which look like, hey, you know, we had a good shot, and some of which look like, what were you guys smoking that day? But we'll go through all of that next week as we put a cap on the season. As a fan, I'm looking forward to tomorrow night. As a journalist, I'm looking forward to tomorrow night. As a human being, I'm looking forward to tomorrow night. And I think anyone who says opposite on any of the three is not a Yankees fan, is not a baseball fan, is just not a nice person in general.
If you ask my grandmother if she were looking forward to it, she might say, yeah, we're going to a cocktail party. Mm-hmm. But if you're not focused on it.
If you ask certain late night television hosts, they might not tell you they're looking forward to it either, according to what we've seen on the internets.
That's a decent segue. That was an interesting rant by Keith Olbermann.
Yeah.
Talking about Derek Jeter. And, you know, it's interesting. Later in the day, Jason Stark wrote an article for ESPN.com that was not at all, he tweeted this out, not at all based on Keith Olbermann's rant, which, by the way, consisted of him kind of telling us all how average Derek Jeter is and how, you know, he doesn't have a high defensive war or hasn't led the Yankees in a lot of offensive categories in his career. And a lot of these tidbits, and I know you want to say your point, but, you know, you can't argue with numbers when people say stats, because those are usually true.
Numbers don't lie.
But when you avoid very, very pertinent stats, that's when you can start to argue. And nowhere, like you've said earlier this afternoon, I don't want to steal your thunder, but nowhere in Keith Olbermann's rant was anything about the fact that Derek Jeter's sixth in the league in hits. And Jason Stark just, it's called 10 Astounding Derek Jeter Numbers. And it's really, really interesting. 2,743 is the amount of regular season games he's played. 3,461, Derek Jeter's hit total. 2,673, amount of games Jeter's played at shortstop. That does not leave a lot at DH, if you remember the first number.
Yep.
1,013, that's
about 5 a year tops.
1,013 is the amount of Derek Jeter multi-hit games. 200 hits in the postseason alone.
Mm-hmm.
So that's basically a really good season, whole season, 162 games for a hitter.
Yep.
And he goes on to say these, you know, absolutely amazing things. One game, it'll become different now. As of right now in his career, he's only played one game where the Yankees were eliminated from the playoffs. So that will change that stat. But Keith Olbermann ignores the fact that, you know, his postseason numbers, his runners in scoring position in October numbers, the amount of hits that he has, very simple. And I think when I was watching it, my reaction was he's only making this argument because of the fanfare. And I get it if you're sick of the fanfare, but I'm sorry, don't mock his personality. Don't say, obviously he didn't invent electricity. The bottom line is Keith Olbermann's the guy who was killing Roger Goodell, killing the NFL for having bad personalities in their league a week ago. And I think too many people told him how great his spiels were. And now he's like, you know what? I'm going to attack Derek Jeter. Well, this is so different. You're praising the one guy in sports in today's day and age who doesn't get in trouble. It's kind of a double standard there. And don't attack the guy just because he's in the news. It seems like it was just a trolling job to me.
Yeah. You know what? If Skip Bayless had made that rant, it probably would have been a lot less inflammatory. Let's just put
right,
it that
because
way.
Because he's known
because that's
for that,
his job.
Yeah.
His job is to tell you this guy is green. You pretty much made my point, but I'll reiterate it in this way. That rant showed how you can build an argument, not necessarily by lying, but just by manipulating the facts into a way where it paints your argument favorably. It was a very good rant for a debate team.
Right. Yeah.
For a nationally televised prime time-ish for sports programming cable show. It came off as kind of petty and planned. And the one thing that got me was, you know, of all things, oh, you know, of the 19 guys that have 12,000 plate appearances, Derek Jeter is like 14th in home runs. Well, Derek Jeter is not a home run hitter, so of course he's 14th in home runs. What was never mentioned once in that entire rant was that he's hit more baseballs into play without making an out than all but five of the thousands upon thousands of men who have ever played Major League Baseball. He has more hits than all but five of them. Never once mentioned. Instead, it was his defensive metrics, which I'll give you. A lot of people have said throughout his entire career, not just now, that Derek Jeter is overrated defensively. It's a valid argument for those who make it. They have enough proof to back it up. Defensive metrics are a little sloppier than most. So you give that a pass if you can make a valid argument. But not once in there was there anything that showed the player that he is. It's, oh, he's 14th among these guys in, you know, OPS. Well, when you're a singles hitter, of course your OPS is going to be low. Your on base will be good, but your slugging is not. So it kind of it evens out. I don't think anyone's ever going to say when Ichiro gets to the, you know, Hall of Fame discussion that of, you know, the guys with 4,000 hits, you know, in professional baseball, he's got the lowest home run total. No one's gonna give a crap, you know.
Yeah,
he's got more infield hits, you know, in a season than most people have in a career.
Right.
That's the type of player he is. Never once in that rant was it mentioned that's the type of player Jeter is. It's just that, you know, this is what he didn't do.
Right.
And that was never his game. And that's, I will gladly listen to anyone, and I will gladly debate with anyone who thinks Jeter is overrated, who thinks Jeter is insert negative adjective here, as long as you have a valid point and can point to his the entire spectrum of his career. If you tell me Jeter's overrated because he's not a home run hitter, I'm going to tell you you're an idiot because that's not his game.
Right, and it was selective use of the truth.
Right, there you go. That's better than I could have even said it.
It was just him using a kind of a point to say, well, this guy isn't Barry Bonds. Well, it's like obviously right. Derek Jeter isn't Barry Bonds. He doesn't put up those gaudy slugging right. OPS home run totals. And at the same time, you know, Derek Jeter's never been the kind of guy that would hit 370 in a season.
No.
He's carried the Yankees team. I mean, and by the way, like, let's take this, the hit in the Subway Series. You know, Derek Jeter was leading off that game. He yep. set the tone for a World Series the Yankees eventually won.
Yep.
That is one home run. It's only one at bat, and it's one hit and one RBI, but it may have totally changed the dynamic of that World Series. So a lot of times you do have to look back on a career like Jeter's and say, how many wins does this guy have? How many yep. world championships does this guy have? How many people have followed his lead and stayed with the Yankees for a long time, had long careers in pinstripes because Derek Jeter was the guy selling them on it? How many free agents have signed with the Yankees because of Derek Jeter? He has made their franchise almost twice as successful as some think they would normally be because he has accelerated their brand more than any other player could. And he's been the captain of the New York Yankees, maybe the biggest franchise in sports. So,
yep.
I mean, there are just things that you can't say with statistics. And I understand that we're arguing the other side, but it just seemed like Keith Olbermann made his argument, obviously having no respect for the other side. And he insulted our intelligence when he's like, you don't know who Red Ruffing is, do you?
Yeah, actually, I do know who Red Ruffing
is. Yeah, it's like, yeah, we do. We're baseball fans. We're yeah. we're in tune here. We're not watching your show like with our mouths open, drooling, being like, oh, this guy's probably right about that Jeter yeah. guy. It's not how it works.
Yeah, you know, and that's especially true because the Yankees, and I hope I don't, I hope anyone who's listening who's not a Yankees fan doesn't feel insulted by what I'm about to say. The Yankees fan base is one of the smartest in sports. They know the history of their team. Every team has their pink hats. You know, we know this. But the Yankees fans are one of the more passionate and knowledgeable fan bases about their team. If Red Ruffing was a Houston Astro his entire career, I could see that being a semi-valid, you know, throw into the, you don't know who he is, do you? I could see that. If he was a Minnesota Twin, or you know, one of these small market, lesser successful teams, you know, I could see that because maybe they're not as knowledgeable or passionate or whatever you want to say. That's not the case with the Yankees fans. And the other problem I had with it is that, you know, you look at the breadth of Jeter's career. And another thing that was brought up was, you know, he never won a batting title, never did this, never did that. It's like, well, he's finished in the top 10 in batting 15 times. So, you know what? Everybody who played in the American League in 1990 didn't win the Rookie of the Year award either. But what's Bob Hamlin doing these days? Bagging groceries? So, I mean, if you look at if you've ever had this discussion with me, you'll know that I think Rookie of the Year is the most worthless award to win. Yeah, Jeter won it in 1996, and yeah, that's great, and yeah, it's going to look good on his resume as just another thing on the laundry list of accomplishments. Angel Barroa won the American League Rookie of the Year once, too. You know where he ended his career? As Derek Jeter's backup.
And it's true. And you know what's interesting, and I don't like to talk about this a lot because I'm a baseball fan, and it's kind of a black eye to the sport, but let's remember, this guy played through the steroid era. I mean, how many years was he outshined, not only in the batting average, but the home run totals, the OPS, the slugging percentage, outshined generally? Outshined, I mean, by guys who were cheating.
Yeah.
And Derek Jeter famously never did. And he was the one just shining light through an era in baseball that was really, really nasty. And now he's come out of that era, still the golden boy of baseball.
Yep.
And somehow, you know, obviously we have to look at his stats as relative because we can't be like, well, he played in the steroid era, add, you know, whatever to his numbers. But it is true that he played through a time when a lot of the numbers ahead of him weren't coming all naturally. And Derek Jeter has really been the guy that kept baseball afloat throughout this period.
And again, you could point to things like how Red Ruffing had such success in an era where the ball was as live as it ever was. You know, that's pertinent information to that. That makes his accomplishments that much better.
And did I see with Jeter. in this video, Olbermann pointed out that Mike Mussina had a higher war than Derek Jeter? Like, is that true? Like, because that probably is true. You probably have a statistician over there at ESPN. I'm sure you do, in fact, and I'm sure you're right. But that alone, there are a lot of things about war that make me kind of wonder how much it knows about.
It's a subversive metric in this regard. If I have a 10 war one season and a negative 0.1 the next, and you have a 5 and a 5, you have a higher career war than I do. Despite the fact that I might have been the best player on the planet for 1 year and had an awful season the next, and you were average. I know 5 is not average war. 5 is pretty darn good, but follow me for the math here. So if I have a 10 season and a negative 0.1 and you have 2 5s, you have a higher career war than I do. It's a cumulative metric. Batting average is not a cumulative metric in that, you know, after a while, one or two at-bats don't necessarily affect it too much. I mean, you know, Jeter's hitting 250 this year and his lifetime average went down 1 point. So, yes, it's cumulative in that it's still, you know, hits divided by at-bats, but it's something that's built up more often. War is just like, this is what you had and this is what you had the next year, so let's add them together. It's like saying his career OPS is 1,000 if 1 year it was 500 and the other year it was 500. It's not. His career OPS is 500.
I love how in this article by Jason Stark, he says 377. Oh, all right. I know the batting average isn't one of those stats that impresses the cool kids anymore. It's Derek Jeter's career on-base percentage, 377. Pretty good. And
400 is considered like legendary, so yeah.
Number 92. From July 21st, 2006 to May 16th, 2007, Derek Jeter played in 100 games. He got a hit in 92 of them. In his prime, he was
not a lot of overs.
One of the best hitters that I've ever seen. One of the best hitters. He's the sixth best hitter in Major League Baseball history if you count just hits.
To have 3,500-ish hits, whatever, 34 or 50-something, the total, whatever the total's up to, to have 3,500-ish hits over 20 years and still have a 310 average, you got to have a lot of those nights where you don't have an over. Even if it's just one hit, it doesn't have to be a multi-hit game. But as you said, it's a selective use of the truth. Another one that was on there was, you know, taking the 8 big offensive categories, home runs, RBIs, doubles, yada, yada, yada down the line. Jeter led his team approximately, you know, once every 2 seasons in any one of those categories. Well, leadoff hitters shouldn't lead a team in RBIs, so you can scratch that one off right off the top. Derek Jeter's not a home run hitter, so you can scratch that one right off. It's like, that doesn't fit his game. If you were talking about Barry Bonds, then yeah, I'd be a little more skeptical that he didn't lead his team in those offensive categories. But for a guy who hit first or second the majority of his career, you don't exactly expect those guys to lead their team in home runs and RBIs, unless you're the Padres, in which case we're not having this discussion.
And what stat did he use of Scott Rolen that he had the same like total career war?
It was war, yeah, his career war.
It was like 1 point less. Well, it's cumulative, but Scott Rolen had a career filled with injuries.
Yeah.
So the fact that Derek Jeter's played 20 years and only had about 3 serious injuries?
He's been on the DL for more than the 15 days outside of last year, I think, like twice.
Yeah, he had the shoulder injury, yeah. And then he
got
hit in the hand.
He had a calf injury 1 year.
He got hit in the hand by Pedro, I think. And
yeah.
I mean,
that's it. And then last year, obviously, was a disaster, but, you know, it happens.
It shows, by the way, that if you argue about the greatness of Derek Jeter, if we're forced to that really...
You're making your own point against yourself.
We're going to be arguing about anything. You can argue about anything. I mean, we argue about everything. Everything in sports. Peyton Manning, is he a great quarterback? Of course he is. I mean, yeah. It's like, let's just let greatness be great and not have these people inflame us and get the credit for inflaming us by disagreeing with the general public.
Well, I think it's the need for everybody to be the one rather than be one of. You need to be the one and not one of. I think that's what it is.
I mean, Keith Olbermann... power to you. I mean, there's articles written about you all across the media right now about how, you know, Forbes wrote an article about how ESPN should be ashamed of themselves. You know, there are a lot of different opinions on this, but it gets people going. It's given us something to talk about.
And you know what? The friend of mine who's on the television production crew for that show, she's still getting paid either way. So that's really what it boils down to.
And that shows
a paycheck.
That show's not getting canceled because he did that. I'll tell you what.
Nope.
All right. NFL Pick'em. Here we go. Week 3. Week 3 was good, for me at least. Let's talk about our teams. The Giants performed really well. They played a great game all around, all around well played. Eagles look really good, 3-0. I think they're going to win that division easily. But It just depends on their longevity. That's the only thing that has yet to be seen. They clearly have the talent. It's just, can they keep it up?
Yeah, the injuries on the offensive line are starting to pile up now again, as has been the want in the past. Lane Johnson will be back for the Eagles, not this week, but next week, which will be huge. But Jason Kelsey, who's one of the better centers in the league based on his athleticism and the need for his athleticism in the offense they play, is going to be out for, you know, about 2 months with a hernia. So that's a blow, especially in an offense that features a lot of screens and rollouts, and you know, he pulls a lot. You don't see a center pull a lot in most offenses. But, yeah, it's going to be one of those where, you know, I'll tell you what, I looked at their schedule at the beginning of the year, and you look at who they're playing, and I would have said 10 to 12 wins. And that's exactly where they look. I would have had Indianapolis as one of those in the middle where it could have been a win, could have been a loss, and they pulled it out. But if you look in general at their schedule, you should figure they should probably go 4-0 against the AFC now if they beat the Colts. And give them 3-3 in the division just because every year that seems to happen. Look at who they play the rest of the way. The West is probably 2-2, 1-3. There you go.
It's funny.
Hopefully the Giants don't go, 3-13 this year, because it looks like they got a good shot at it.
Well,
fortunately,
they looked really good last week, and I think they're actually may surprise some people. I don't think they're going to win the division, but maybe they can, battle back towards respectability.
I'll tell you what, at the beginning of the year, we had this discussion, and I said, somebody asked us in a Twitter chat, and I said, who will be worse? And I think I said the Giants would be have a better record, but just barely, because their line wouldn't put them out of as many games as the Jets secondary will. 4 weeks in, I'm thinking I'm wrong.
Wait, but I don't understand. Did you watch football last week? The Giants played twice as well as the Jets did.
They did, but the problem with that is they played a Texans team who was highly overrated, whereas the Jets had a shot at home to beat a Bears team that looks very good.
Well, what's your basis on the Texans being overrated? Just the fact that they didn't have Arian Foster in?
I think they're a team that they need everything to go right for them to be good. I know Arian Foster is huge. I get it. He's been the number one pick in fantasy multiple times in the last 5 years. But they look to me like a team that needs to have every single thing go the right way for them to be the team they're supposed to be. And if they don't, the wheels fall off.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think the Texans are a great team, but they were 2-0 going into the game against the Giants. It's a good thing for them. It's a sign of maybe good things to come, and it's definitely a win. So
we'll
you get
see.
In the right direction.
They both have the same amount of wins, so we'll see.
Okay. So Giants at Washington. I know who do you have? I'm going to guess Washington.
Yeah.
All right, I have the Giants. Washington got beat up, as did the Eagles in that game. I don't know how well they're going to be able to respond. Kirk Cousins, he looks decent. He made some mistakes against the Eagles. But
my theory is on a short week that, Washington lost D'Angelo Hall and a couple other guys are banged up. The Giants also lost Jernigan last week. And I watched Kirk Cousins.
I put D'Angelo Hall way above Jerome.
I know. I know. Well, I was saying a key player. I mean, Jernigan ends up being a key player on offense because their wide receiving corps is Victor Cruz and a bunch of other guys. I know it's all relative, but I watched Kirk Cousins put up 400-plus yards on the Eagles' defense and watched that team hang with the Eagles, who run a play every second, it seems. I think against a defense that's not as good, they'll have an even better day. And against an offense that's a little bit more methodical, the defense will be able to overcome some of those losses. That's my
thought. I think it's going to be a pretty close game.
That's my thought. I don't think it's going to be a blowout, but that's my thought there.
Okay, so let's talk that much. Let's talk about our two teams and then just kind of blow through the rest.
Okay.
Green Bay at Chicago?
Chicago.
Yeah, at Chicago.
Green Bay is going to be the best 8-8 team in the league this year.
Tennessee at Indy?
Indianapolis.
Yep.
Tennessee's terrible.
Miami at Oakland?
Next.
Yeah, Miami. Detroit at the Jets?
This was the toughest one to pick, believe it or not. I'm not sold on Detroit being as good as they looked in week one. I'm also not sold on the Jets being as bad as they've looked at times, because they've got a very real, if you look at it, they had a very real chance of being 3-0. As bizarre as that sounds, they could be 3-0 if a couple of breaks went their way. I still think Detroit's a better team. And I think the secondary is going to get lit up by Megatron and Golden Tate. So I'm going to have to go Detroit.
Yeah, I went with Detroit. Last week was a really tough loss for me as a guy who I root for the Jets to be decent because I just want to hear as little as possible about them on talk radio. The Jets, with Geno Smith and almost no weapons on offense, Chris Johnson looks like he's 45 years old. They have absolutely no weapons on offense. I'm going with Detroit. Tampa Bay at Pittsburgh.
Tampa Bay is terrible, too.
Yep. Pittsburgh actually looked really good last week, too, on Monday Night Football, so I'll go with them. Carolina at Baltimore.
I picked Carolina in that one.
I did as well.
I think Baltimore's offense is too one-dimensional, especially with Pitta out. You don't have anybody to worry about the passing game.
I picked Carolina. This I thought, was the toughest one. But I think they'll squeak out a win. I don't think it's going to be a high-scoring game at all, but...
Carolina never seems to be, and with that offense, it's not going to be all year. No.
Buffalo at Houston.
You just heard my rant on Houston. I picked Buffalo.
All right. I think Buffalo, but I wouldn't be shocked if Houston wins that game. Jacksonville at San Diego.
I picked San Diego. Wouldn't be surprised to see an upset. San Diego is coming off some big games. You know, they beat Buffalo. They beat Seattle, which was huge. Could be a huge letdown in Blake Bortles' first NFL start. I wouldn't be surprised to see it go the opposite way, but I picked San Diego just because of the whole West Coast thing.
I'd be shocked. They're going to be my pick for Survivor. Atlanta at Minnesota.
I'm pretty sure that Georgia could beat Minnesota, let alone the Atlanta Falcons.
Yep, Atlanta. I like them there. Philly at San Fran. Here's your boys.
Eagles are 3-1 after this week. That's my pick.
All right.
San Fran... It's tough going on the West Coast. Philly's not played well in San Francisco in general in the past. I don't think the 49ers are as anemic as they looked last week. I don't know why Frank Gore wasn't involved at all. Killed my fantasy team.
I knew. Well, you wouldn't care if he wasn't on your fantasy team. Carlos Hyde's the better running back. That's why he wasn't involved.
Yeah, but he's not going to be the number one back until at least the end of this year. Their defense is still struggling for, you know, to kind of find that guy to replace Alden Smith. But with all the Eagles' injuries, having to travel, the 49ers do have that explosive offense. And, I mean, they couldn't stop Kirk Cousins. Colin Kaepernick could have a field day.
Yeah.
It's just the way it looks.
It seems like the 49ers have that endless potential, and they just never really reach it. Yeah. Well, they did for years, but this year it's been disappointing.
You know how I said Green Bay was going to be the best 8-8 team in the league? San Francisco could also be the best 8-8 team in the league. But they could be the worst 13-3 team in the league, too.
Yeah, they're in that same kind of category. Yeah. I picked San Fran as well. I think you're going to San Francisco. You know, it's tough to win away in the NFL, let alone a totally different coast. New Orleans at Dallas, Sunday night game. This is going to have a lot of scoring. What do you think?
Based on the fact that New Orleans has knocked me out of a suicide pool now for the third year in a row, and I'm an Eagles fan, I actually hope that a giant sinkhole swallows AT&T Stadium is my desired result. If I actually have to pick one of these teams to win, have you seen Dallas's defense?
Yeah. You know what, Lou? Actually, Dallas's defense has played a little – actually much better than I expected them to play. Yeah. They've surprised me this year. Again, New Orleans will win this game. I think it'll end up being like 41 to – I don't know.
You remember the Denver-Dallas game last year? It was like 51 to 48. Like this game, the over on this should be in the 80s.
Yeah. If you have a wide receiver or tight end on either of these teams – I would play them.
And if one's available and you got guys on a bye week, I'd pick them up too.
I wouldn't be surprised if Dallas goes down early and then throws the football a lot to come back.
Yeah.
And those are the kind of games where you don't want DeMarco Murray, you want Dez Bryant.
You know, the one running back who I think could have a good game is actually Pierre Thomas because of the way they use him. And now that Ingram's hurt, they might need to run him a little bit more. If they get up big, he might get so he might be the one running back in this game you want.
Okay, cool. Monday night football, New England at KC. I like this game a lot. What do you think?
I actually can't wait to watch this game. It'll be the first Monday night football game I could watch in full. Even that counts the Eagles. I mean, you know, it's still Yankee season. I kind of got to pay attention to that. I got to go with the Pats. I mean, last week was not a banner performance by any stretch of imagination against a team coming from the other coast. But something I didn't say last week that I wanted to when we were talking about the Giants and Jets is that good teams find a way to win games they shouldn't. And that's pretty much what New England did. Kansas City with Jamaal Charles out. I know they dominated last week, but look who they played. I'm just – I don't – I'm not sold. I don't think they have enough offense to hang with New England if New England gets rolling.
See, the funny thing is, I think that Kansas City without Jamaal Charles, with Nile Davis, is still a much better offense than New England. It seems as if New England is just kind of blech so far this year. I mean, I granted, they are a good team, and they're going to win 11 to 13 games, somewhere in that range. But
it's a very ho-hum 11 to 13 games, I think is what you're saying.
Yeah, well, they play in a terrible division. But right. I like Kansas City in this game. It's so hard to win at Arrowhead on the road. Mm-hmm. They're not going to make a ton of mistakes. And I think that they're a well-coached team. They play pretty good defense.
Did you just say an Andy Reid team was well-coached? As an Eagles fan, I take offense to that.
They are a very well-coached team.
Go ahead. Continue.
And if you weren't so bitter about just never winning a Super Bowl, maybe you'd take advantage or you wouldn't take for granted the fact that you had multiple winning
seasons. I'm not bitter about that at all. What I'm not bitter about as well is a couple weeks ago when I watched Andy Reid run the ball three times on first and goal from the one and laughed and was thinking that, you know, any Chiefs fan that I knew would be like, well, you're welcome. Here's what I had to deal with for a decade. Good luck with that.
All right. There's some bitterness as an Eagles fan who has just yet to see his team ever.
And Chip, we trust.
End his season with a win.
Now, you said San Diego is going to be your survivor pool pick, huh?
Yeah. Just because I don't know when.
Is that a always bet against Jacksonville kind of
no,
mentality?
Not really. It's one of those things where if Jacksonville was playing, I don't know, Seattle, you either don't or you do, because if you don't, you save Seattle because you're going to want to pick them at some point in the year. But San Diego, when am I going to pick them in the Survivor League if I don't pick them this week? They're at home. They're playing one of the worst teams in the league with a rookie quarterback who threw two picks in less than a full game last week. Yep. I like Blake Bortles a lot.
Two touchdown passes in less than a full game last week too.
But. So I just think it's a solid pick, but you know.
I'm torn, and I'm going to solicit your advice. I'm torn between three teams. I see your point on San Diego. The fact that it's Bortles' first start and there's really no pressure on him, like everyone expects them to go into that game and lose. And last year, like you said, the Seattle example, I mean, our own This Week in Football panel actually picked that game not only straight up but against the spread because it was so big. I'm torn between three teams. I've already used – now, the one I'm still alive in is a three-strikes pool, so keep that in mind. I'm 3-0. I haven't used a strike yet. I've used Indianapolis. I've used the Eagles, and last week
– that took you a while to use your boys.
Last week I used – did I use Indy last week? Yes, I used Indy last week. Philly week one. I forget who I played week two, but it was a safe bet. I'm torn between Pittsburgh because Tampa Bay is – I don't know. Tampa Bay is one of those
teams. That would be my second choice.
Tampa Bay is going to go 3-13, and you look at them and you go, they shouldn't be that bad. But then when you watch the games, you realize why they're that bad.
That's totally true. That's exactly how I feel.
So that's choice number one. Choice number two is Atlanta.
I never pick a team on the road.
It's that worries me, and it's, again, the no pressure on Teddy Bridgewater thing. I know they have no running game. Well, now their best rusher in the game is going to be Teddy Bridgewater. But Atlanta just hung 56 on the Falcons, and they've had 10 days off, which is kind of what makes me feel like they're going to come out of the gate, you know, well-rested, confident. Roddy White could be fully healthy, this, that, the other thing. And then, obviously, Miami, because Oakland is atrocious.
Yeah,
I just don't
pick teams on the road. I never do it. Except maybe at Jacksonville, because there's like 10 people there. But home field advantage is a real thing in the NFL. I don't know. I just don't touch it.
I don't know. I'll let you know next week how I did and who I went with. But it's going to be a game time. I have till 6 o'clock Saturday because I'm not going to pick the Redskins or the Giants. So I have till 6 o'clock Saturday to make a decision. I have a feeling it might come somewhere around 4:30 Saturday afternoon. But we'll let you know. But anyway, that's going to do it for this edition of the Yes Men. We'll revisit how we did next week, and we'll make this a recurring segment going forward as baseball season comes to a close for 20 of the 30 teams on Sunday. And then, like I said, next week we'll have a bit of a postmortem on the Yankee season. We'll go over our predictions and how poorly or well we did and amend them accordingly based on what's happened now that 162 games have been played. And we'll have a lot more other hijinks. Before we go, though, I do want to give a shout-out to one of our listeners. We had the little Yankees 57 contest, who would be the Yankees 57th player. It was indeed Jose Perella. And Yuri Perez became number 58 today. So could have done another contest. But Sam Green from Queens, congratulations. You were the winner of our Twitter contest. There's some T-shirts headed your way. Enjoy them. Doug and I did not sign them because we just didn't.
That would just make them less valuable.
Right. That you wouldn't want to wear them then, and we don't want that. So congratulations to you. Thanks for listening. Keep on listening. Everyone else, sorry you didn't win a T-shirt, but thanks for listening and keep on listening.
Don't be sorry. They didn't tweet in. They're a bunch of
non-tweeters.
Lazy, except for Brielle. She is the best. She always tweets at both of us.
Brielle got a shout-out on the Yankee game today, by the way.
Yeah,
You were up here recording, but
she did.
Yeah, she did. So we love you too, Brielle. And we love all of you because you keep us in business. So thank you for listening. Until next week, he's Doug, I'm Lou. We're headed to Boston to enjoy the end of Derek Jeter, and you should too. We'll see you next time.